I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where there's more than one way to get high, baby. I'm your host, Erotic American Bob Mackey, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I'm using my whole ass this episode.
Certainly is, and who else?
Mount Seldom, Chris Antista.
Today's episode is Grandpa versus Sexual Inadequacy. And that's what this episode is all about. It aired on December 4th, 1994. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real world history.
Balls is swinging, Bobby. The game show at Network is on the air. The Lion King is also breaking box office records, and the 69 boys worm their way into our hearts with Tootsie Roll, while Heidiwood Madam Heidi Fleiss is convicted of three counts of pandering.
Pandering?
Yeah. Pandering.
Is that a legal term?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Big Bang Theory.
jail for life. Summarily executed.
Bazinga.
We're in the new era of young Sheldon now. As well, but Lion King was inescapable. It was everywhere, though. I just heard about how Pocahontas internally at Disney was seen as the good one, and everybody else, like people who worked on The Lion King, were like, "Who shows on Pocahontas?
Shows what the fuck you know, Jesus."
They thought
that movie sucks.
It was going to be the Oscar winner. They're like, "If we're ever going to win an Oscar, it'll be for Pocahontas."
And I can see why. The movie was really a lot about environmentalism and racism too. And they're like, "That's 90s gold
too." Both sidesism, and can't we all forgive each other? Maybe the invaded are just as guilty as the invader.
Oh, yeah. In hindsight, a healthy dose of whitewashing and boredom.
It's also just mega boring.
Pocahontas was a bald child that a white man married.
Yes.
It's not that romantic.
Not a Victoria's Secret
She's
model.
Not Kim Kardashian like she is in the movie.
Milan's the one you're thinking of. That's the good one. Mm-hmm.
Well, and also the Game Show Network. I watched a lot of Game Show
Network.
What a
pile of shit, huh?
Yeah, it was. But it's if you have to watch something before
but
YouTube.
But it's astonishing. A channel made up of the crap channels use to fill time in between good shows.
Yes. Yeah.
A whole channel made up of that, and I have never watched it.
I just love watching the ones from the 70s.
I do like that.
You're going to win $500. Whoa!
Making whoopee.
That was one of my favorite underrated SNL sketches, which honestly is a very childish sketch, but it was a, you're watching the Game Show Network, and it's an old 70s thing, and it was really about making, women had to pretend to do, like, lick an ice cream cone, and then they obviously look like they're sucking dicks, and so that was the joke, which, whatever, but the better joke was that they would say, like, and it's, all right, you win our grand prize, $50!
I'm going to Disneyland. Does it exist yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was in the 70s. I'd rather watch 70s ones. 50s ones of like, this is too boring.
I'm going to Marineland.
So this episode is a Bill Oakley and Josh Weinstein special because it is about old people, and it has a lot of 70s references in it, as is the first movie that we see.
That is true. Well, first, I wanted to say this episode is a special one to me because by the date that we did this, I know that this was the last time my grandfather visited us at my family's house in Florida.
Did he like being reminded about his sexual inadequacy?
It was a weird episode to watch, I got to say.
I think I did watch this with my parents. I didn't feel shame or anything. Maybe they just handled it well.
Well, so my papa daddy was in town. That was
wait a minute.
Yes, I know.
Sort of like corrupt governor.
Well, this is. I read somebody goofed about this on Twitter, but it is totally like having a southern friend. They'll eventually just say like, "Well, that was my peepaw and meemaw." Like you'll just eventually hear them call their grandpa. Yeah, and I called mine papa daddy because he was my father's daddy. He was. Papa Daddy.
Still scream that out during sex.
But he never came to visit us. Like, we're not particularly close in our family, but we do like to pretend we are. So he came to visit, and we were just doing stuff. He hated his time here. We went to a catfish restaurant that we thought he'd really like, and he just complained the entire time. He's like, "Whenever you order fish, you're supposed to get bread with it." And he insisted
they
give him...
hush puppies?
He insisted they give him a slice of bread with his fish. It was so crazy.
This disagrees with Papa Daddy.
And so then, even with him there, we were certainly not going to miss a new episode of The Simpsons in my house just because Papa Daddy was there.
And he liked to eat early.
So we watched the episode, And I remember it so clearly. We're in my living room in front of our big 32-inch television, and it's my dad, my grandfather, oh, and me. And I don't know what this episode's about.
The effrontery of making fun of my shrinky-dink.
Well, so my, fortunately, Papa Daddy...
in making a terrible impression of your grandfather. Really enjoying
it. I like it.
In a very Abe Simpson way, my Papa Daddy falls asleep after the first joke.
Oh, thank God.
He just nods off, which in retrospect, I was very happy that happened. But then it was just so weird. I'm watching this episode with my dad, and it is about a guy Homer's age having a difficult relationship with his grandfather and then trying to improve his relationship with his son or his children. I was like, this is too similar to our situation that we can't talk about it. Oof. We can't. It's this giant elephant in the room that we can't recognize.
This is making me real glad I watched these largely alone.
Yes. This episode is about sex, but it's mostly about Homer repairing relationships with all of his family members.
Or attempting to.
Through sex.
Yes. Yeah, and through sex. But why don't we hear the one joke my grandfather heard?
We now return to the 1971 film Good Time Slim, Uncle Doobie, and the Great Frisco Freakout, starring Troy McClure.
Slim, if we've got the bag with the stolen diamonds, then what happened to the bag with our stash?
There's more than one way to get high, baby.
Great San Francisco.
Ooh.
Please, Marge, how often can I see a movie of this caliber on late-night TV?
Is there something wrong, homie?
No, it's just that I've only seen this movie twice before, and I've seen you every night for the last 11 years. What I meant to say is, we'll snuggle tomorrow, sweetie, I promise.
Wow, does that sum up a lot? Jesus Christ.
So this movie, it's sort of like a take on, Freebie and the Bean or Mother Jugs and Speed
Freebie
or one of those
so
ridiculously
good.
Named 70s movies about a heist or...
Crazy Mary and Larry. No, not that
Dirty
one.
Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. Yeah. Not a goddamn thing. That's a line from the film, Peter Fonda. But if you have an over-the-air antenna, that is still... television. It's insane how much 50s to 70s television I can watch now, but from getting an over-the-air antenna.
That just reminds me of what every movie was during a weekend afternoon. Just like, I'm not watching
It's
this.
Like just above Mitchell.
Yeah.
Like, all the time.
I mean, that's how MST3K got most of its movies, or a lot of its movies were...
garbage that could only barely be dumped on UHF daytime television.
Affordable trash. Or my favorites of those type of films were... ones that were clearly a pilot for a TV show that didn't go, like Driving with Danger.
Shake Hands with Danger.
No, I wasn't thinking Shake Hands. The one about the
Riding with Death.
Riding with Death. Yeah, the wannabe $6 million man show that was also about trucking.
It's great.
It reminded me of that. But meanwhile, the Homer and Marge thing, I think it's an interesting reversal that like Marge wants sex and Homer's just like, eh.
This is sort of what makes The Simpsons the better show of the 90s, or one of the best shows of the 90s, because in the 90s, and previously to the 90s, but in the 90s especially, the gender politics were... women never want to have sex with you. You have to trick them into having sex with you, and they don't like it. The Simpsons is like, no, women can enjoy sex, and women can want to initiate sex, and men can be the one who are like, I don't want to do this, or I'm too lazy, or that's too much work, or I'm not in the mood,
etc. And then into the 90s, the male impotence joke, which this show doesn't really make.
No.
It's something you don't realize until you date someone or live with them for a long time. I was just watching a movie, got drunk, and forgot to get intimate. And that's what the drug is for, to make you super feisty.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this is pre-Viagra.
Yeah.
So
Viagra changed America, in comedy especially.
Yes, a good 5 solid years of old men getting boner jokes.
I love that joke. I'd love that joke on late Simpsons, and by late I mean 10, 9 seasons, but... where Marge said, I never heard so many Viagra jokes in 1 minute. Like, that is what comedy was. But then Homer, one that Homer says, I've seen you the last 11 years. Like that assumes he's only, the first time they had sex was when they joined the Castle Club and created Bart.
And they were together like 8 years before
from 74
that.
From 74 to 80.
Yeah.
And,
for 6 years.
I guess
it's best not to do the math.
It would be weird if they didn't have sex that long, even even if they tried to put puritanical politics on Marge.
I started watching the show with that 90s show, so my timeline's all messed up.
It is weird. There are basically six unexplored years of their lives where they're together without children.
It's true.
That are never acknowledged.
They should do six seasons of that. That should be the show.
Just wait until this gets canceled.
But Homer should have used their dead sex life as proof that he hadn't sexually harassed her, because he's like, no, my dick's dead.
I can't even imagine.
I feel bad for Marge that she constantly just like, Sue, let's have sex. It seems to imply at least 6 months go by that they never have sex.
And Marge is so ready for sex, she's willing to let Bart endanger his life by going on the roof when he thinks he sees a UFO. Yeah. And he just falls off the roof. And they don't seem that alarmed. They're like, oh, I guess Bart fell off the house.
Yeah, well, and it's also extra sexy of when they're like, don't turn on the light! Don't turn on the light! Like, though I can absolutely identify with Homer, your partner wanting to be in the mood, and you're just like, enchiladas.
It is weird. I never thought anything would be more important than sex. And like, then I got Netflix and delivery food. And
I could marijuana.
Buy all the booze and marijuana I wanted and video games. Oh, my God.
I saw a friend who recently just said, like, I'd rather have a professional massage than sex. It would be preferable.
That's more expensive than sex these days.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, and speaking of Bart's obsession with aliens, that was another thing that happened to me as a kid. I don't know if it happened to you guys.
Totally.
Like,
I got obsessed, would get all these stupid, awful books from the library, because apparently anybody can write, anybody and everybody will write a book about UFOs. And I would just wait on the roof to see if anything happened.
Well, and not just UFOs. I definitely liked UFOs, but like, I watched Unsolved Mysteries and believed all of it. It scared everything.
Yeah.
My mom just told me a story about Unsolved Mysteries I had forgotten, which was I watched one about a guy who kidnaps children, and that I, for a long time, told her, like, well, no, don't leave the window open at night. Like, somebody could come in and kidnap me. Like, don't do it. Like, she told me I was
the aliens, the Sasquatch that never scared me. I remember specifically, it was one Unsolved Mysteries where a woman washing dishes was shot through her window with no suspects and for no reason.
Jeez.
And at like 7 years old, I'm like, I don't want to be near any windows at night ever again.
That's the true terrifying thing of Unsolved Mysteries. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not, well, I don't understand the Sphinx. It is, I don't understand how someone could do random violence to another person for no reason.
And it could be me. And I remember I had stopped sleeping with stuffed animals. And it gets even creepier. And I had to start again. And I don't know why I chose it. I chose this awful, terrible, cheap-ass Chuck E. Cheese doll. And I'm talking old school, fucking dead eyes and derby hat. Chuck
it's
E. Cheese.
Like Five Nights at Freddy's action figure.
It is a and I didn't feel safe, so I ripped his eyes off. I ripped his eyes off so I wouldn't be shot in my sleep. What the fuck was wrong with my brain?
And Chris did not grow up to be a serial killer, at least as far as we know.
Not yet. That's
what TV can do to kids, man. It does influence children, man. It does.
But I think it's smart that they plant this seed in Bart's brain, the believing in UFOs, as early as possible in the episode. It's very smart.
Yeah, it's good writing, and then also that, Marge is so thirsty that she will let Bart perhaps die just to get her rocks off. But Homer's already out of the mood. Like, he's already deflated by the time she comes back.
And as a super nerdy note, a rare appearance of a television in Marge and Homer's bedroom.
That's true.
It's always in someone's bedroom when they need it.
Yeah.
Well, if he needs to eat a bunch of food in bed while watching
or
Cops.
Or somebody's sick.
Yeah. Also, though, I think Marge should have just let Homer watch a porno in bed. Like, that was the first time he's like, oh, okay. No, a tasteful book. Like,
yeah.
Come on, Marge. If you really want it, like, this is the first time Homer showed any interest.
Watch porn together.
If
that's what it takes. Marge is too much of a prude, I think.
In that case, she definitely is. And so... So then they go to the bookstore, and Homer, as a kid, I always thought, like, this, I didn't ever hear it as this guy looks like a poo on my first watch.
Oh, okay.
I thought it sounded like this guy looks like a poo, or like, look, I never
like
heard
a
it.
Piece of poop?
I guess. Okay. I don't know how I heard it, but I didn't read it as... These people in the Kama Sutra look like our Indian friend Apu.
Okay.
Which it also shows you how much they counted on the audience at this point. They're like, Apu's not in this episode. They just are like, if you're a viewer, you know who Apu is, and this won't just sound like a random thing Homer says.
Yeah, they're not putting him in the store to give you a visual reference.
But anyway, so then the family buys books together.
This one's a good choice, and it's not too smutty. It's a book on tape by Paul Harvey. You know that nice Midwestern man on the radio who's like a pleasant version of Grandpa?
Ooh,
Mr. and Mrs. Erotic American.
Mom! Dad!
Look, this biography of Peter Ueberroth is only 99 cents, and I found the new Al Gore book.
Same planning, sensible tomorrow.
Yeah, I hope it's as exciting as his other book, Rational Thinking, Reasonable Future.
I'm getting this book on UFOs. Did you know they're real? But there's a huge government conspiracy to cover it up.
Oh, that's just a paranoid fantasy.
X-Files music.
Data transmitting.
How is this?
Mr. Vice President, someone finally bought a copy of your book, sir.
Well, this calls for a celebration.
Celebrate good times.
I will.
It's a good Al Gore.
It's great, and I'm so familiar with that clip. I forgot the setup entirely. I forgot that the joke was, I don't know, that's so good. It's such a good joke.
It's such a good joke that you think that this will prove, the setup is that this proves there is a conspiracy about the UFO, but it's really that somebody actually bought Al Gore's book, which I did look up what Al Gore books are. So Al Gore had published some books as a senator, but at this time when he was vice president, pretty much he did reports that then would be published as books you could buy that I think maybe he didn't even make money off of because he was vice president. But while he published in office, the closest in title to Same Planning, Sensible Tomorrow was Creating a Government That Works Better and Costs Less.
Catchy title.
And he also wrote books about with his now ex-wife about the power of family. And and also some boring books about climate change, which might as well be Man, Bear, Pig. It's so fake, right?
I think the verdict's still out on that.
I know. Like, Al Gore, what a fucking idiot.
Before we leave books, and additional books, the sign outside says Michener goes for $1.99 a pound. James Michener wrote when he was still alive, just 800-pound family sagas about entire generations in like an area. Like one of them is, I think, just called Alaska, but he won the Pulitzer for Tales of the South Pacific.
I didn't know that about him. I missed that joke.
Well, I wanted to make a note in order to avoid discussing who Paul Harvey is. Go listen to Homer's Barbershop Quartet.
Oh, you're right.
We talked extensively.
I was
Bob
wondering.
Does have a clip, if we want.
This is News Radio 610 WTVN.
Hello, Americans. This is Paul Harvey. Stand by for news. Everybody seems to be talking about the importance of calcium in the diet for both women and men, and yet 80% of Americans are not yet getting enough calcium. You know, there is one delicious way to get a goodly portion of the calcium you need.
It's a commercial.
Total breakfast cereal.
Shut up! That was a news, bro. Come on! That masqueraded as news!
Paul Harvey, no one sounds like him, but he's kind of bad at his job as an announcer because there are just these huge pregnant pauses. Yes.
And it happened. But I did point out before, he has been broadcasting the rest of the story from World War II.
Yeah.
It got spun off into its own show in the 70s, and he continued it till his death in the 2000s.
I would listen to him.
One of the most long-running things in the universe.
I would listen to him on AM radio on my commute to college just to laugh at his crazy voice and crazy inflections on things.
Stand by for news.
Also, though, Paul Harvey, apparently he didn't write books about erotic Americans.
No, I mean, the joke is that he would never write this book, but it's very much focused on Americans and patriotism, so it's like a Paul Harvey version of like a sex guide or something like that.
And also, kids, if you don't know Robert Mapplethorpe, which was the joke that Homer holds up a book with a butt on it. Well, first off, a childhood secret, which obviously this is pre-internet porn, a childhood secret you needed to know, was like at a bookstore in the photographs section was a perfect place to find naked pictures of people.
A treasure
and nobody
trove
would
of
stop
free
you.
Playboys.
Exactly. That it would be an easy way to find pornography. But again, who fucking cares? Like, it's everywhere. You can't not see.
Yeah. Photographer famous for nudes.
So
male,
Mapplethorpe
female.
Was, Robert Mapplethorpe was a big, big time photographer who did take pictures of celebrities. Like, you can look at Mapplethorpe photos of like Schwarzenegger and all these other famous people. And he also took photos of normal people, and he was most famous for nudes and overt homoeroticism in his work.
And BDSM?
He did a ton of so in a more innocent world that didn't know about fisting and BDSM, his photographs were like, there's a rope around a penis?
Mother, come take a look at this.
And same with, like, if you imagine the 70s in an innocent time where most people had never heard of fisting before, let alone seen a picture of it, even a beautiful picture of it by Mapplethorpe probably freaked a lot of people out.
That's true.
And so Mapplethorpe at the time was actually used as a bit of a cudgel. And again, the completely bullshit argument against the National Endowment of the Arts were like, well, your taxpayer dollars are paying for this gay butt sex.
There's a great Mr. Show about that.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And Mapplethorpe was, and it was something that really pissed me off about people like Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. But people like Hillary Clinton who used video game violence as something to prove that they're family values, while meanwhile she absolutely defended Mapplethorpe. Like, that was, she defended art from the government in that way, but when it was video game violence, she's like, I'm with you, parents, this is scary. Like, fucking hey, I just want to get on my soapbox about that.
It's cool. But what about Peter Uberoth?
Peter Uberoth, well, my brain honestly shut down reading facts about
that's
him.
Not mine. I was like, I'll let someone else do this.
It makes sense that a biography of him in 1995 would go for 99 yes. cents.
So he was basically a rich executive asshole who ran the MLB in the 80s, the Major League Baseball. And in 1989, he had to step down because he had colluded with team owners to basically control pay for players, to be like, let's all agree we're not going to pay above this certain thing, and fucked over the players.
Researching the news, there was something about salary caps for the MLB.
I assume Lisa was only buying it for the value, because I don't know why she would want to know about this guy or enjoy him in his work.
He doesn't seem like a very Lisa figure.
No.
And he's still around, being a rich jerk, like nothing, no punishment. He screwed ball players out of millions of dollars, but like, he's still fine. Mm. So that's it. That's all I know about Peter Uberoth. I really could not learn anymore. But this does show you how big the X-Files was at this point, that The Simpsons was making such an overt reference to it.
It was much bigger than The Simpsons, even.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. It was a hot thing for about 4 years.
It does always surprise me when I look up at the news that The Simpsons wasn't anywhere close to the top of the ratings. And not only that, that every other Fox show beat the shit out of it.
Yeah, after the first season, that move to Thursday killed them.
Yeah.
What was
number one on Fox this week? Beverly Hills 90210, a show that stands the test of time and holds up to this day.
Though I still wonder if The Simpsons, if season two had stayed on Sunday and let's say it continued it only increased the popularity from season one into season two, would season three be what season three was? The more successful it was, maybe the less they would have gotten away with.
Interesting.
The less cool stuff they'd have gotten to do.
We'll never know.
Not a ratings thing. It was almost a prestige show. If it had more attention, maybe it would have been noted to death.
Well, yeah, but this was before prestige TV. Like, it was before
not
people...
Not for Fox.
Well, I mean reviewers who jerk off to The Sopranos. It's before that. But
it was Fox. They were playing a different ballgame because they couldn't compete with the other networks, really. So they had to hold on to their critically revered number one shows a little longer than NBC or CBS would.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and as Bill Oakley told us, that it was, the secret was it wasn't a popular show and that no adult watched it, he said.
Wow.
And they'd go to table reads and people wouldn't laugh at jokes because they're like, this isn't for me, I'm an adult.
Yeah, I get the suspicion that like no one really was casting a huge eye towards The Simpsons until syndication money started. Then the attention really started.
Meanwhile, like, Baths Together could be fun in a big hot tub, but in a home bathtub,
there aren't
space for two adults.
I can't.
I'm maybe just speaking for me.
I'm a longman, and I can't fit into any bathtub.
Me
I remember
either.
The one time I was in a hotel suite because it was paid for by a game company who was bribing me. There was just like a gigantic bathtub. I was like, I can finally take like my one bath per decade because I can
masturbate
finally
like
fit.
A girl.
Exactly. So many jets. So many jets.
Yeah, no, it's something that's bummed me out when I've gone on some bribery trips that they don't have baths at them. I'm like, oh, what a rainforest shower. I can shower at home. I want a giant bath.
I miss it because, man, that GTA, the GTA setup, they put me in the nicest hotel I've ever been in as one human being. And then they're so rich, they instead bought a giant loft apartment in San Francisco so they never have to fly me to New York in the Gramercy Hotel again.
Wow. Just to have a business.
And I'll never take an appointment with them again. But it's okay.
None of us will.
Not jealous.
I like their desperation of, like, kids. They're just trapped in the dark, soaking.
Homer looks like he's in a lot of pain, too.
Well, that thing, the faucet digging into his back, like, it just hurts to think about it.
Yeah, I have a friend who had to be taken out of a bathtub by the fire department.
Oh, boy.
He doesn't like to talk about it, so
I wouldn't.
And then Well, like you said, with Paul Harvey's commercial, he then basically inserts into his audiobook a commercial for AAA.
A romantic vacation can provide titillation. Sensual sanitary seclusion awaits you at any of America's fine AAA-approved motor lodges.
The Arabian Nights room looks nice.
The Pharaoh's chamber has a vibrating sarcophagus.
Sorry, dear Fred and Ethel. Should have made a reservation. We only got one room left.
The toilet is overflowing in the caveman room.
Oh, here we are. The utility room.
This isn't very ironic. I think it's an actual utility room.
No, honey. It's a romantic fantasy. I imagine I'm the janitor and you're... the janitor's wife who has to live with me in the utility room.
That's such Homer's a great bad fantasy.
I love this joke. It's like a total lack of imagination. Yes, you can't think beyond the utility room.
Or being married. It's like he couldn't create... The point of it is to role play. And even when he's role playing, he's like, well, you're my wife who's trapped here.
And these things are real. They call like Fanta Suites.
So this specifically in design, the inn is based on the Madonna Inn in San Luis Obispo, which did have themed rooms, though not as fancy themed rooms as this. And according to Priceline, you could get a room for like $200 a night right now. Go to Priceline.com. So the Madonna Inn is still in operation. But I always associated this more with the jokes you'd see in anime about love hotels.
Yeah, love hotels.
The love hotels of Japan.
I didn't know they were themes.
In America.
I guess they would have to be. Okay.
Well, if you saw the film The Wolverine, there's also a joke about it there where Wolverine, but it's also in a million animes, where they go to a love hotel, which is an hourly hotel. It's something, this is me as a white man assuming things about Japan, but I believe it is, love hotels were created for... the same reason other people in America would rent one-hour hotels, for a hookup and then to leave. But it's also that you don't want to take somebody back to your tiny apartment and have sex on your little bed. You'd meet up there. Or you'd have... It was also like casual sex was... in the 80s, especially when love hotels were in vogue, the casual sex was definitely frowned upon. And so even though Nintendo invested in love hotels before they hit it big,
they had a lot of failures before video games.
Yeah, and so that, but they also had very themed rooms. The scene in The Wolverine is them pointing to, well, this is this theme room, this is this theme room. Like, theme rooms were part of it, though obviously you could also find love hotels that are just... it's a bed, and you a bed and a bathroom. Done. I also just love how Homer goes, the utility room.
I like the, and I didn't really get this until the stupidest reasons, Fred and Ethel, and I Love Lucy reference.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a specific reference to an episode where the side characters
just
go to the
hotel. Like Fred and Ethel going on vacation.
Like, you don't want to be compared to Fred and Ethel, a famously cantankerous couple on TV.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was a reference to the episode. I only got it because someone pointed out when I got satellite radio, he's like, you know the stations are named after I Love Lucy characters. I'm like, I did not, but I did wonder why I listened to stations called Fred, Ethel, and Lucy.
Babalu.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I haven't had it in a while. I don't know if they're still named that.
I also like that the guy comes to get the wet dry vac, and it is because of the overflowing toilet in Quimby's room. It's nice.
Dressed
continuity.
Like a Flintstone.
That's true.
Just knowing he can walk in at any moment too.
And it's very cartoony, but I love the back and forth driving over of the tape. It's
good
so great.
Tape? Yeah.
And that obviously Paul Harvey could not get them off. He failed. Which it's, I also get this moment confused a little bit with Natural Born Kissers, because they kind of have a similar situation to this, except then they end up having sex in a barn.
That's right.
In front of the cow, who's really liking it.
That's
that
right.
Cow likes what he sees.
What a filthy episode. Even filthier than this one.
They're back home, and Grandpa this is where Grandpa enters the tale.
Yay.
Welcome home, son. I broke two lamps and lost all your mail. What's wrong with your wife?
Never mind. You wouldn't understand.
Flu?
No.
Protein deficiency?
No.
New mono ultra microscopic silico volcanic coniosis?
No.
Unsatisfying sex life?
Yes! But please, don't you say that word.
What? Sex! What's so unappealing about hearing your elderly father talk about sex? I had sex!
God, Dan Castellaneta is making his ape even more decrepit. Yes. His voice is just wavering all over the place. I'm
Ancient. I think he had to extra turn it up because he has so many scenes with Homer.
Yeah.
Normally, he doesn't have to do. For the longest time, I thought that I should have known it wasn't a fake word and that the nucleoscoliosis is a real thing, but it's kind of fake in a way.
Yeah.
In that it's a real condition about bad lungs, but it is perfect. Purposely invented as a word to be the longest word in the dictionary.
It was invented by the president of the National Puzzlers League in 1935. Ah. That entire giant word that Abe says is just a synonym for silicosis.
It's when
you inhale too much ash. It's a condition that your lungs get.
Not very funny. That's very serious.
It's very serious.
But it's just a freaking dork name. It's just a dork word.
Like a nerd made it up to win a contest.
Exactly.
That's all you need to know.
Exactly. But that's then to be used. It's better than it's no better than anti-disestablishmentarian.
I think it's more of a mouthful, and good reading on that with Dan.
Yeah, I wonder how many takes that took there.
They spelled it out phonetically.
I also like that Abe knows how useless he is, that he's just like, oh yeah, I lost all your mail, how's your wife? But I definitely would never want to hear my father talk about sex. Never, ever, ever. And we never did. I never had to hear. I had the sex talk with my mom. I did not have to have it for my dad. It was very unengaged.
We got the sex talk at school.
They're
shifting the burden.
How dare they? They probably told you the wrong thing about it.
Told us gay sex was dirty.
Same message I got in my school. I wonder if kids today get that same message of just like that. This is a side tangent, but I had to go to an abstinence only thing, which like scarred me for life. It was a big. Basically a sermon, quite honestly, but they just don't literally say God, but they say, wait for marriage, marriage, marriage. And they had to have a section where this woman said, you know, anal sex is the most dangerous, filthy sex you could have with two men. And it's just so fucking, I look back on it now like, that is so gross and cruel. You're just telling kids who are already homophobic, they're like, oh no, you should be more homophobic. Yeah,
those people are dirty.
Teaching them a safer way to do it or offering them the aids and tools they need to do it appropriately. And
again, though, I feel
shame,
it's only,
shame, shame.
I feel it's only fair if they're going to say sex between two men is somehow filthier. Mm-hmm. They should be telling girls that sex between two women is the cleanest sex you could have, actually.
It's most fun to watch.
And this is perfect Uncle Weinstein of Abe telling pointless stories and old-timey remedies.
Oh, it's yes.
You're home safe. Done my duty. See you the next time we need your signature.
Oh, you never want to spend any time with me, but I can help you with your loving problem. I got a home remedy that'll put the dowsers back in your trousers. Legend has it my great-grandpappy stumbled upon this recipe when he was trying to invent a cheap substitute for holy water. Here you go. Hey!
Homer just left.
Here you go, you ingrate. Think of me when you're having the best sex of your life.
I love that line.
Yeah.
Thanks,
drink
Dad.
It.
You want to call that line of the show?
Sure. Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
That's the joke.
That or any of the readings where he says, sex! That is a line of shit.
It never occurred to me that Abe is essentially making a flaming Homer using only ingredients you find in a bathroom.
I thought of that too. He stumbles upon it just like Homer did, or his great grandpappy did.
That's true. And the first time I noticed, Abe has asbestos pills.
This is the second episode about like a potion that a Simpsons make.
That's true. He makes a potion that apparently gives you a boner that he just remembered he could make. And though it's a rare time where, in the past, when Abe has these remedies, they don't work and are poison.
Well, this is poison, as Dr. Hibbert points out.
Yes, it is poison. And again, we already mentioned it, but yes, this is a pre-Viagra world this joke exists in.
Miracle wasn't with us yet.
Yeah, that blue pill would not exist until then. And now guys can have boners whenever they feel like it, which is disgusting. I don't want some old rich guy shouldn't have boners.
But this poison does give Homer a dowser in his trousers.
It certainly does.
I like that animation of just like perking up, you know, the second he
the little
it.
Like wiggle like oh, yeah. Oh that you just
Homer horny now.
You should just know that Homer's rock hard for the rest of these scenes you're watching. Like keep that in your mind. I just love that he immediately throws the kids out and like just gives them $50.
Carries Marge and kicks the door behind. find them.
Yes,
and,
he is red. He is raring to go. And, like, Homer's raring to go, and then the kids go off to watch a... the stock footage festival is great. It's a great cutaway.
It's a great joke that only works once.
Yeah.
But with the reveal when I first saw it was just, like, falling over laughing.
And the wieners on a conveyor belt, which they... Oakley and Weinstein take credit for inventing.
I love it.
It's so only good. Topped by that Mr. Show sequence where they have a clam and a hot dog with two chestnuts taped to the end of it and shove them together.
And it's kind of fitting that the only two of the only people in that place are comic book guy and Herman. And again, like stock footage, I don't know. Technically, stock footage is as big now as it ever was. Like I've heard so many ads on other podcasts saying like, "Hey, sign up for this place for HD stock footage of everything you want." Like just to put it in your video when you say, "Well, I have a B." Oh, well, here's a B.
Well, I mean, this was the '90s, and I think maybe 80% of all music videos were just stock footage.
Yeah. Oh, 80% of Super Nintendo commercials. It was like half Hindenburg's and opera,
and that guy getting shot with the cannon.
Yes.
Homer later becomes.
And I just remember the plane with like 10 levels falling apart.
And the shaky bridge.
Yes, yeah. Oh, the shaky bridge. So many classics.
And then always the atomic bomb test footage somehow worms its way in there.
That's
a little scarier.
It's a little scarier, but I guess you, as Dr. Strangelove would teach us, you gotta laugh.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
So then, after a night of intense lovemaking,
laborious sex,
we find out what Marge gets hot and bothered with, and that's Paul Anka and Rex Harrison.
Two kind of like fey men you wouldn't consider like super masculine.
Paul
Dr.
Anka.
Dr. Doolittle?
I don't think of Rex Harrison even as Faye. I think of him as just, like, grumpy.
I think of him as a Stewie from Family Guy.
Yes, yeah. Okay, he is Faye. Yes.
Yeah.
And then, meanwhile, Paul Anka, who still is alive, a future guest star on the show, and one of Trump's few proud celebrity friends.
Like
most celebrities run away from him, but Paul Anka's like, I would have sang at his inauguration, but I was at my grandson's whatever. Like,
why would the star of Girls Town betray me like this? I love Girls Town.
Yes, he's most famous for his appearance in Girls Town, the MST3K classic, which
Mamie Van Doren.
I can't believe it's actually on their last collection.
They finally made it.
At this point, listeners, MST3K is putting out its final DVD collection
allegedly.
Because they've tried with everything, but there's like 10 films.
Yeah,
that
like 10 or 11 movies.
One old woman owns like 5 of them, and they don't know how to talk to her.
So you'll never get those.
And if you'll indulge me, you may know. Wait, who was it? Paul Anka?
Paul
Anka from, used to do a little write up on all these Christmas specials. A great Canadian special called George and the Star, and all the music is by Paul Anka, and not Christmassy at all. It's sci fi as shit, and it's awesome.
Wow.
Interesting.
Stop those
Shout
monsters,
out to my Canadian.
1, 2, 3. That's classic Paul Anka. And so I also, it had been a while since we'd seen Homer get magical stubble reappear, but it's a very like...
We saw that in One Fish, Two Fish when he shaves. And does the muzzle immediately grow back?
It immediately grows back by the time he says like, and that's how we shave. Boom, and it's back. But it's a very traditional thing of like, after a night of lovemaking with your woman, you wake up and shave. That's what they do. And I also do love that Homer's literal New Year's resolution was to avoid his father. He's like, what about my New Year's resolution? And, how disgusting are Homer's blue pants that Ned is just like, ugh, get them in the garbage bag.
Just the idea of their secular lovemaking.
Yeah, maybe that's how they're disgusting.
You just be ready with that garbage bag.
And they're a married couple making love. They should be fine.
I know, God, Ned's hung like a horse.
Later. Yeah, I gotta say, how can...
He's packing
Maude,
some serious hog.
How can Maude take all that? I have to say, like, she's... boy, I don't know. That he has a scary wang. But speaking of dicks, Homer is... Homer has some dick-focused sales.
I love this.
Sir! Hello, sir! Yes. You look like a man who needs help satisfying his wife. So... because people have some sort of moral objection to our sex drug. Let me tell it, you idiot! Step right up, folks, and witness the magnificent medicinal miracle
with our energizing, moisturizing, tantalizing, romanticizing, surprising, herprising, revitalizing tonic.
I doubt very highly that one elixir could boast so many fantastic properties.
What say we amscray out of here and have a wild wingding at the cyclotron, Doctor?
Anything you say, Professor.
I like the dorky girl who's like a Mrs. Frink, who, though, by the way, he technically has a wife.
My wife is going to kill me.
Yes, but this completes the joke of he's really always been the nutty Professor Frink is, and so when he drinks it, he becomes Buddy Love, which is really just Jerry Lewis doing a Dean Martin impersonation.
Oh,
but,
you're right.
But here is some classic Buddy Love from the film.
All nice kids. They have very, very good taste, I might add.
I'm glad. It would be a shame to waste the genius of yours on the riffraff.
Well, honey, I always say, if you're good and you know it, why waste time beating around a bush, true?
Yeah, I don't even need Dean.
Now it's so obvious. I didn't even think of that before. Yeah. I never really watched the movie, though.
No, I have. I love Slash. It's fascinating. I don't want to go off too much on Jerry Lewis, but we did just lose him.
Yeah, all right. I feel like we've talked about him every episode since his death.
But it's just the idea of someone who you will never really find anyone in your life or your grandchildren's life who will be as famous a celebrity as Jerry Lewis. But he lived so long, he outlived most of his fans and contemporaries.
Yeah,
but when
decades.
He died, he did, he's kind of a dick as well.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
he died, it's like, it was a murmur. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that's bitterly tragic, like the idea that someone this famous and popular outlived his own fan base.
It's true. He was famously an asshole like that, but he was also the genius. When Paul Rugg on Animaniacs would make fun of him.
Yeah, Mr. Director.
As Mr. Director, that was him like, I'm a genius, everybody should listen to me. But he was really good at everything, but that's also why he didn't make good stuff for the longest time, because he was an asshole and people can stand him like, fine, be a genius over there. We're not making this shit with you.
Fascinating person. It seems like the world should have stopped for his death, but it occurred 30 years too late.
Yeah, it did. He, I believe it's 10 years after his death is when Day the Clown Cried will be free.
Oh, is that? Oh. I meant to look into that.
I believe that was what I read before his death, that he had given it to like the Library of Congress or whatever, but under the condition that it couldn't be seen until 10 years after his death. So we all have to hold on for another 10 years.
I'm sure it's very, tasteful.
Very tasteful.
Like, life is beautiful.
Certainly. I mean, people have read the script. They know how bad it is.
Yeah. Well, you know, the person who's famously seen it and talked about it.
Harry Shearer.
Yeah.
Harry Shearer.
It's perfect. He says, like, you can't imagine. Whatever you imagine, it's not as bad as you, is that, or it is worse than that. I also love the sign of homemade medicine. That's such a great sign.
Oh, if you can indulge me for a moment.
Sure.
I had an incident where I was camping, and I was in Big Sur, and I went to the Henry Miller Museum, Tropic of Cancer. Don't pretend to be fascinated. It's not interesting. But inside there was like one hippie girl who clearly lived in the museum. But she's listening to something like, what is this? I'm like, oh, this is Harry Potter, and I'm watching this episode at the same time. This is Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets, as read by Jim Dale. And I started looking up Jim Dale, because Jim Dale, let's face it, there's a lot of people who didn't read Harry Potter. They listened to the audiobooks, and he is now embodies every single character.
He's very good.
The Weasley twins. And for me, Jim Dale is the most famous from Pete's Dragon. Pete's Dragon, and it is the only context I have for the medicine salesman, the snake oil medicine salesman that Grandpa is. So I'm playing this clip because I love Jim Dale.
Oh, go for it.
Listen, my specialties are audiology, mycology, serology, teratology, embryology, psychology, zoology, and any other ology you can think of. My friends, you're not giving me a chance. I brought all these medicines back from Paris. France!
No one to stop.
Honi soit qui mal y pense. Shamed be he who thinks evil of it.
I know that's indulgent, but I love Peach Dragon, and like I instantly got the joke because of Peach Dragon. And he's clearly dressed like a colonel-y type of person, so yeah. I know it's a reference to something else.
Gesturing at things with a cane. Yeah, it was a very familiar kind of stereotype of that era.
Yeah, but I can't draw it back to anything other than like fucking Music Man, but he's not selling medicine.
Yeah, I mean, if you've seen the, or if you've played the video game Red Dead Redemption, there's a Medicine Man character in that as well. Mm-hmm. But that also implies, again, that these jokes that in 1990, Abe has to be 100 to
yes.
have done.
to be familiar with the routine and everything.
And I guess he did this in between working as a night watchman for a cranberry silo.
That's right.
Which his previously established job. But honestly, any joke in the front, like, nah, that's not real. Yeah. Doesn't count. But the just homemade man, and it's the just stamp the ticket guy who punches Homer in the face. It was a return of him. I also did love the line Homer said, like, I know I'm going to get rich with this scheme, and quick. It's so great. But all right, so then we see all the parents getting turned on by the drug. I love, I think this is when Oakley Weinstein really fell in love with Milhouse's parents
yes.
as a gag. I feel like you see the beginning of this joke ends in their divorce and doing a whole thing about Kirk and Llewellyn's life. Like,
have we ever explored their troubled marriage?
Not
before?
Really. No, we saw the Llewellyn when we seen Llewellyn before. She disapproves of Bart's friendship with Milhouse,
but Kirk isn't even there.
And Kirk approves when Milhouse is full of beans.
Yes,
and they're definitely united front against Homer trying to overcharge them for an elephant ride. But this is the first time that there's been any idea that they are not getting along.
Yeah.
And the idea that, like, they normally sleep in separate twin beds, which, like, 1994 is like, you guys, like, you have major problems if that's how it is.
I mean, I found that out about, I guess I can throw them under the bus, my sister's former in-laws. They Ooh. Were, like, weirdo creeps who made us pray at meals and things like that whenever Ooh. We saw them. And then I found out they slept in separate beds. I'm like, it makes sense. It all makes sense.
Yeah, but I know almost all my friends' parents did. When you talk to everyone now, like, my parents were the weird ones.
My parents and always had a shared
that's
bed.
Some hippie shit right and there. Same bed? What?
Can't you see why? Yes. My own comforter?
I guess.
I mean, yeah, you get to roll over and just keep your own thing. Oh. But my news trick with that is, like, you just buy a king-size thing to go with your queen-size bed. And
more
just
blanket.
More blanket.
I love Kirk's line, yeah, every single night.
Every single night.
And then Milhouse is just, like, bobbing his head back and forth.
His head bobbing in his pup tent is great.
Remind me to loop that for myself. Because it's just the physics, the perfect bobblehead physics.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the silhouettes are going at it behind him. He's just like 5 feet away from them.
He has just no clue. Well, that's the great joke that none of the kids realize. They don't know what sex is, and so they don't realize their parents are ignoring them because they're fucking too much. And wow, Mrs. Hibbert. Man, the animators
she
had some fun with her.
Smoking hot.
Yes, which I guess like... They would. I feel like they even sexualized her in the way Felicia Rashad was sexualized on the Cosby Show as
she
well.
She was always wearing like it wasn't revealing lingerie, but she was always wearing
exciting
like
lingerie.
Yes, like very like with lots of big collars and frills and things. 80s lingerie.
And as Dr. Hibbert though says, like it is poison. Like you're poisoning yourself. But down the hatch.
Down the hatch.
Like as long as it works. So then we get to see that the parents are missing and the kids don't know what to do.
Listen to this. Unexplainable behavior. Individuals acting in a secretive fashion are often involved with UFOs or other paranormal phenomena, e.g. telephone explosions.
Jeez, if it's in a book, it's gotta be true.
Scary, no? And this guy's head of the Spaceology Department at the Correspondence College of Tampa.
Will you cook my dinner for me? My parents aren't around and I'm not allowed to turn on the stove.
That book.
That's
I love
great.
It. The Spaceology Department of the Correspondence School in Tampa.
Henry and I are laughing a little harder having seen Tampa.
Yeah. Tampa sucks.
Nothing accredited comes out of Tampa.
Nelson clearly uncomfortable without having any sort of authority figure to rebel against.
Yeah, it's
carry on.
Now he's the authority. That scene has a very good like Twilight Zone vibe of when the town only full of children, no parents there.
It also features a rare appearance of one of my favorite characters in The Simpsons, the orange sky. The orange sky of dusk almost never comes out.
And I just love the look of the alien expert is perfect. It's exactly the meme dude who taught of aliens from History Channel. Like
every
the
expert they talk to has like unkempt hair, glasses.
Hair like a falcon.
They're just like, I know everything about it. And I also love Milhouse's reaction. Like, if it's in a book, it's got to be true, which that extends to just all the internet now. Like, well, if it's on the internet, it's got to be
somebody
true.
Somebody wrote it, didn't they?
I have absolutely been that person who will retweet a story. They're like, well, this seems true. And then I should go like, this is not a real website. This is too good to be true. This story fulfills a personal bias of mine, so I just believed it.
I source all my news from Bored Panda.
Telephone explosions. That's a weird one to pull out. I don't know the conspiracy behind this, but I do. I just love that kids are so into conspiracies.
Kids love this stuff because they're still figuring out the world, so this stuff could make sense to them.
They realize that adults, once you realize adults could lie to you, then you do wonder, is everything a lie? But there's also some quaint nostalgia for me of pre-9/11.
Yeah.
Pre-9/11 of conspiracies that don't involve... Mm. None of those involve saying the Jews controlled something.
Now we know the government is too inept to like pull off any conspiracy. They can't even build a fucking bridge.
I know.
The return of Spittle County.
Yes,
final appearance of Spittle County.
Oh,
yes.
No.
Introduced in Colonel Homer. That's where Lurleen lived. Or
where they drink FUD.
The FUD, yeah.
We got a lot of tonic to sell and a lot of tonic to visit. Frigid Falls, Mount Seldom, Lake Flaccid.
Great. I'm gonna be stuck in a car all weekend with that wheezy windbag.
And that's what's wrong with Bart's generation. Now as for your generation...
That is exactly what it's like to drive with an old person. Like they will tell you what's wrong with your generation, and you just have to grin and bear it, because what are you gonna do? Tell your grandpa he's wrong? Like, that. I've been in that situation... I definitely, as a kid, did not get those sex puns of Mount Seldom and Lake Flaccid. But yes, they get to Spittle County, and that's when they meet. I also love this line. Actually, I love the way this is delivered.
I'm not convinced. I've had bad luck with aphrodisiacs.
All questions will be answered. All fears will be allayed with one incontrovertible demonstration. May I have a volunteer from the audience? Yes, you, sir. Now, sir, you've never seen me before, is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, then, how come his face is on the bottle?
You're the worst chill I've ever seen! You're a disgrace to the medicine show business!
They didn't start chasing us until you turned on that getaway music!
They sadly turn around.
Happy to report that the music is Earl Scruggs, the Foggy Mountain Breakdown in the Foggy Mountain Boys. Was recorded in 1940, but made famous in the film Bonnie and Clyde.
That's right.
That is why people of Oakley and Weinstein's generation probably know it. I had no idea what it was.
Nah.
And through a recent thing on Video Game Apocalypse, we could trace back the guy who talks like this. It's Ed Wynn.
Right.
Comedian Ed Wynn, made famous for most of us in Alice in Wonderland as the Mad Hatter.
You're right.
But it's the voice of the Beaver on Family Guy and King Candy and Wreck-It Ralph.
It's a very good cartoon voice.
It totally is a good voice.
I wanted why did the skeptic hillbilly never return? He's such a great
voice.
And his hillbilly face, like his long nose, his giant ears.
Just like a smash cut to his face and his hands waving back and forth. Hey. It's so funny.
And that he's had...
I've had bad luck.
That he's had bad luck with aphrodisiacs is such a funny history to get into. Like,
what's up with that guy?
And I also like that they're so bad at the grift that they put their faces on the bottle but made Homer his patsy in it. And just like, how come your face is on the bottle? I just love how the guy says it. And Bonnie and Clyde, for our generation, I don't think means much because... I think a lot of people watched it. It's a fine film, but I think they watched it just because no film had been that violent before.
That movie rules.
It was just awesome. It was just striking violence to you, and sexual too.
Sexy violence,
which everybody loves that. And okay. Meanwhile, the kids act out in real life what happens every second on Twitter all the time, which is inventing a conspiracy theory together.
Okay, it's now painfully clear. The adults are definitely paving the way for an invasion by the saucer people.
You fool! Can't you see it's a massive government conspiracy? Or have they gotten to you, too?
Hey, stop it! Why are you guys jumping to such ridiculous conclusions? Haven't you ever heard of Occam's razor? The simplest explanation is probably the correct one.
So what's the simplest explanation?
I don't know. Maybe they're all reverse vampires and they have to get home before dark.
Reverse vampires! Reverse vampires!
Vampires!
fire.
Lisa's sarcasm really backfires there.
Yes, well,
because they're so credulous.
Nothing's impossible to believe when you're believing a conspiracy theory. You'll create anything in that, and that is. But that's absolutely, you see that on Twitter, of somebody saying like, well, this is a conspiracy by Russia to make you believe that. That's exactly what a Russian agent would say on Twitter. It wasn't that. It was this. Like, nobody believes anybody on Twitter. It's just the exchanging of conspiracy.
I believe
things.
Only what validates my own opinion.
Exactly.
That is it.
You're pretty safe in that way.
But it's also a wonderful... It's a direct... It's not a callback, I think, but to Three Men in a Comic Book.
Absolutely.
Same music. Yeah. Same people fighting.
I wonder if they just pulled it out of the library. They're like, oh, what happened? What did we play the last time Milhouse and Bart fought in the same location, too?
Is that West Side Story-ish music, I'm guessing?
It's more like the Star Trek fight music to me. It's like, okay. Or a Star Trek fight music.
Okay. Yeah. Pay attention, Seth MacFarlane. You'll need it for the Orville.
That show.
It's not bad.
Fine, sure. I also like that Lisa tries to tell them they're wrong and they just build a new conspiracy. It's just perfect. And so then we get to, this is a side of Homer's upbringing I kind of forget, that he grew up in a, like, on a farm until he was like 10, it would appear, in the middle of nowhere.
They got real lucky they never showed the exterior of his home residence until way later on.
Though, I have to say, when we get to Mother Simpson and... They clearly live in an apartment in Springfield. They do not live
in
the city.
They did abandon the farm after the cows started giving sour milk, so they were only there until Homer was, I don't know.
Well, Homer's scaring them off. He seems older in him scaring them cows than he does when he sings the fig... has the Fig Newton song sung to him by Mona Simpson. So,
it's a brief slip-up in the rock salt Simpsons continuity.
Somebody got flame for that blender. But it also dates Homer's age that clearly is like he's 8 when Kennedy is a new president.
Yeah, actually, this episode officially ages him up. Previously, in Homer the Vigilante, he was 36, and now he's 38. Because
that's true.
Josh Weinstein and Bill Oakley, they were only in their early 30s, but like Homer seems much older than us. We need to age him up. But it's scary to become as old as Homer.
Yeah. Ugh, yeah. And he's almost, but you can never make him over 40. They're like, nope, it's too old. Homer can't be over 40. I still don't think he is.
I think in Kill the Alligator and Run, they age him up to being 40 or 42.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's taking that quiz in the beginning. A classic episode.
Oh, that's
can't
the
wait
worst.
To get to that one.
That is, if anybody who says a principal and the Papa ruin the show, I'm like, watch that Spring Break episode. That is the episode that breaks the show.
Oh, we just
got to it on 30/2010, actually.
Really?
Yeah, the Principal and the Pauper.
I'm glad you guys were kind to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And though it's weird, Homer did... I don't blame Homer because he was a child, but he technically ruined the family by scaring those cows. Like, they had to sell the farm and leave because Homer scared the cows.
I think he should have been supervised, Henry. Let's not blame the
child.
Yes,
that's true. That's true. Abe, what are you saying, Bob? Abe's a great parent.
Look at me, Mom. I am President Kennedy.
Oh, Abe, maybe our Homer could grow up to be president someday.
You, president? This is the greatest country in the world. We've got a whole system set up to keep people like you from ever becoming president. Quit your daydreaming, Melonhead!
Dad.
This does go along with, when we saw Younger Abe before, and I believe the way we was... He really loves setting low expectations for Homer. He's like, pick the dented car.
Yeah, the plus attractive. Yeah. He kept telling him to have low expectations. And though this is kind of the meanest. Well, actually, in the way we was too, the way he says, like, I just collect the cans, daddy.
Oh, right, right.
But this is the way he taps him with the newspaper. It's like, I will hit you. I could hit you right now. This is a threat of violence.
And
but,
they do cover up his mom's face because they weren't ready for that reveal yet.
Yeah, obviously not Glenn Close there. But though we'd already seen her face in the flashback of Homer's birth in the half-brother episode.
Oh, you're right.
So we had seen Mona's face then, but they kind of wanted to walk that back.
I forgot they showed it.
It's really... Well, I mean, that whole episode is ridiculous from a from a history standpoint, they forget a lot of things from that history. And I also do love the nuclear shadow of little Homer on the wall from the Radiation King.
Radiation King, Jesus.
But I get it. Actually, the new season of BoJack is also all about how horrible fathers were then, and it was just expected, like, yeah, your dad's terrible. He's a man in the 50s who's not expected to have emotional intelligence, and he's not going to learn. And that's pretty much how Abe is there, too. Just like, no, fuck you, kid. Like, you annoy me. And I guess Homer is getting revenge on Abe by ignoring him and being cruel to him now, which is
putting him in a home.
It's a great plan to have with your elderly parents if you don't like him. I look forward to it myself someday.
One day they'll be weak and sick and have a lot of money put away.
Yeah, but then if they get Alzheimer's, they can't even hear you when you make fun of them. Like, you gotta move fast.
Just scare them with puppets.
Man, that's true. I would never do that to my mom. Anyway, the fight between Abe and Homer in the car is it's really raw to me, and it is things like, I want to have this argument with my dad and tell him, like,
suppose.
I know you, Chris, in the past have said your parents were really positive to you and
annoyingly so.
But well, I had the opposite. Like, I've never had my dad say he was proud of me or say he thought I did a good job of something. I've always been doing the wrong thing. And so
you want some money, Nancy?
Yeah, well, I went to the wrong college. I didn't get a good job. I'm way too liberal. I liked rap music.
Where's his podcast, Henry?
Yeah.
Where's his podcast empire?
Exactly.
Who's getting the last laugh?
He's probably got more complaints than you.
I mean, the last time I had the closest to this conversation was when we started the Laser Time Patreon. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him how successful it was. He's like, well, all right, if that's good for now, I guess. I was like, thanks. And it was right after Dave had his dad on a podcast tell him live on the air, like, I'm proud of you,
son. I'm really proud of you. I'm going to become a patron.
He did. To hear that and then to hear my dad go, like, well, all right. Like, it's just, it hurts.
My parents were nice. They left me alone by my own request, though. Just, like, okay. Just let me do my own thing and don't make me play sports or attend extracurricular things and I'll be fine.
Yeah, this is play the clip.
Yeah.
Your whole life, you never said one nice thing to me.
That's because you're a screw-up.
You're the screw-up.
You little...
All right, that's it. We're going home. I'm sick of you and your stupid tonic.
If I hadn't taken that stupid tonic 38 years ago, you'd have never been born and I'd have been happy. You were an accident.
Get out.
I'm sorry I said that.
Out.
I'm going to get out of the car, and I hope you'll find it in your heart not to drive away. Well, I'll be all right as long as I can remember my army training. Huh. Dang.
Does anybody in this room know if they were an accident?
Okay, I said exactly the opposite because my mother... You were conceived in the Elmore Hotel? My parents intentionally got a hotel room to fuck and make me. And my mom just...
You were like a project.
Yeah, my mom tells me all the time because I do think their generation, maybe Oakley and Weinstein, like, for some reason that was important to let your child know they were intentional and they were wanted. I don't understand. I honestly don't understand how telling your kid they were an accident or unexpected, how that is harmful.
I guess...
If you understand how sex works...
For Homer's generation, it was expected, like, your parents always wanted you.
Okay.
And instead being left with, like, well, we didn't want you, but we love you, like, that, it does make you feel unwanted in a way.
Yeah, it's like,
does
you were a surprise and you made our lives worse because we were not ready for you.
Well, yes.
And it's kind of shifting the blame onto the child who did
but
not ask
that's exactly
to
what I did.
Yes, yeah. No, I think we all made our parents' lives worse.
Yeah,
but,
that's why they didn't follow their dreams and I'm following mine without children.
I was created intentionally to my knowledge, like, I was actually born in September because this shows you my dad's priorities. My dad was actually a little league coach before he had kids. He just loved.
Oh my God, you were such a disappointment.
Yes,
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh that loud.
Sorry. I know.
Oh, no.
Yes, I get. You all know the end of this story already.
I'm sorry, keep going.
But so he. if I were, if his children were to be born in the early fall, mm-hmm. they would then be selected earlier in the, they would be the Holy oldest shit. Kids in the, in Little League, thus having a physical advantage, presumably,
named
over
after Hank
other
Aaron.
Kids. Oh, no, he did not. Oh. No, he did not.
Oh, sorry.
Henry's gotta... first real name is Babe.
but, no, I'm named was... after, Henry's
Honus Gilbert.
Name. But the but so when I was born, I was born in September, conceived in, I would guess, January or December with the plan
so your
of,
dad was starting a team?
Yeah, your dad wanted to get you drafted.
It was definitely the plan I would be on his team, which was called the Optimists, was his team.
We need 11 and, more of these, honey.
It was a really, honestly, like, I also think of what a pessimist he is and how negative and cynical we all are that his team was called the Optimists, but like... And again, I had no sports aptitude from the beginning. I did not like it. I was a creative little gay kid. And obviously, you know,
yeah, me
maybe
too.
You're disappointed by that.
I like know it's... I was an accident. I was not told in a moment of anger. Mm-hmm. I was told because as a little kid, I was like, why did my sister get a baby book? And there's all these pictures of her and you guys, all this stuff from her, you know, babyhood or whatever. It's like, well, Bob, let's talk about it. It's like, we didn't plan for you. And my mom was going through some things with my dad, who I haven't seen in like 20 years. Mm-hmm. That's the preferable way to deal with a father who sucks, Henry. Don't see him for decades. Don't call him. Don't see him. Don't talk to him. Don't email him. But I'll tell you what, mistakes are the better kids because they have to try harder. Mm. My sister is a fuck up and they plan for her. Meanwhile, I have to work harder and I've earned everything. I'm not bitter about it at all.
So, yeah, I don't think you should feel... If you were revealed to be an accident, I don't think you should feel
no.
Bad.
I was just like, oh, that explains why there's no baby book for me with like all these, like, the first time he did this and the first time he did that.
Yeah, I had family friends, too, who they did have... They had a kid they called the surprise, where it was, you know, one kid, they had one kid, then 3 years later they had the other kid, and then like 8 years later they have another one, and that is the whoopsie kid. But they love that kid all the same, and even though she's a huge lesbian, they still love her. Like, and I would feel shame. I don't know why. I kid. I wonder, too, if that army training line helped inspire Oakley and Weinstein to later do the Flying Hellfish episode.
Yeah, I mean, we did see a bit of his army background in the Lisa versus Malibu Stacy episode, where he's having like a war flashback with the headset on.
And as we all know, he did wear a dress for a time in the 40s.
That's right.
They had designers back then.
And he seduced Hitler. And
that was made up. He admitted that was made up. Homer basically sentences him to death by abandoning him on the side of the road, by the way. Mm-hmm. In real life, if you leave a 100-year-old man on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere who doesn't have a phone, he's dead.
He will get torn apart by birds.
Yes, but he survives long enough to buy flowers to try to apologize to Homer.
I love him mashing them through the mail slot. They look so pathetic.
it's so great. But Homer is right to ignore him. But I think also I love that this shows... This is how cruelty is passed on from generation to generation.
Oh, yeah.
Is by being mad at your parent, but not understanding you have similar faults.
Homie, are you really going to ignore Grandpa for the rest of your life?
Of course not, Marge. Just for the rest of his life. He said I was an accident. He didn't want to have me.
You didn't want to have Bart.
I know, but you're never supposed to tell the child.
You tell Bart all the time. You told him this morning.
But when I do it, it's cute.
I love that.
When I do it, it's cute. That, I mean, Bart does know that. And, like, I guess there's a difference between an accident that... Between a married couple accidentally has a couple and... This you were an accident in that I was forced to marry this person I wouldn't have married otherwise if they didn't have my child. That's also a plot in Rick and Morty. It's why Jerry is with
Beth
is because he got her pregnant. As Rick says, you've put 10 cc's of failure into her and I've been stuck with you forever.
And like, Lisa is the only planned child, right?
Yes, yeah.
Because in the episode where she's born, it's like, you're going to have a little sister, and they're fine with the idea. But
well, I mean, actually, Marge presents it as, we're going to have, there's going to be twice as much love in this house.
Right.
And Homer's like, we're going to be doing it twice. So it was a surprise to Homer, too. All three were surprises.
But Homer was happy about Lisa, not so happy about Bart or Maggie.
Yep, yeah, those are the only, though, then again, and in Maggie Makes Three, there's an apocryphal that I will tear apart when we get to that episode.
Oh, believe me, I know.
But the way Homer learns of all their pregnancies are wrong. They are misremembered. When he tears out a tear that's like, that's not how it was in the other two flashbacks.
It's a good joke, though.
It's a great joke, but it destroys continuity. Boo! That
so I'm you've ruined your life.
Now. Yes, yeah. So it's also funny that they mention telling Bart stuff, and then they cut straight to Bart and his subplot, basically just settling it.
So finally, we're all in agreement about what's going on with the adults. Milhouse. Okay, here's what we've got. The Rand Corporation, in conjunction with the Saucer People.
Thank you.
Under the supervision of the Reverse Vampires, are forcing our parents to go to bed early in a fiendish plot to eliminate the meal of dinner. We're through the looking glass here, people.
I love that. I love this, that line
honestly,
so much.
This honestly makes more sense than Pizzagate.
It does. And it's it absolutely does.
It's a good observation that in order for all these nuts to get along, they have to begrudgingly acknowledge each other's conspiracy theories as a vast network.
Yeah, just to work together, like, fine, I recognize your fiction if you recognize my fiction.
And the we're through the looking glass here, people. Hey. It's from JFK, and I have a clip from that. It's a very minor line.
We're talking about a crime, Bill, pure and simple. Y'all got to start thinking on a different level like the CIA does. Now, we're through the looking glass here, people. White is black, and black is white.
And
that hand motion is the same one Milhouse
does. Right, you're right. I just realized
from
that.
From JFK, which, of course, I didn't get at the time.
Oh, neither did
I. And what I also didn't get is that's Kevin Costner just dispensing a conspiracy to both Yondu and Newman from Seinfeld.
Yes. There's a later scene in there where I love the scene where Michael Rooker quits, mm-hmm. and he's just like, the conspiracy was getting too big for him and he couldn't believe it anymore. And the way he says, like, how do you know who your daddy is? Because your mama told you so. I'm out of here. Just like that's, he was basically saying there's a bedrock to existence. And if you even question that, then you can't believe anything. And it's just pure chaos.
I like that Wayne Knight went on to being a parody of JFK.
Yes, that was beautiful.
Yeah, a few years later on Seinfeld.
So the Rand Corporation is a real thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a government think tank that is at the center of a lot of conspiracies. And you can see that it's perfect for conspiracy-minded people.
It's full of globalist, Henry.
It is. The Rand Corporation has existed since, like, post-World War II. Maybe they recruited some Nazis. it was a post-World War II creation where it's a government-funded think tank that hires the best and brightest in America to help come up with ideas. A lot of those ideas involved spying, but on the Ruskies, not Americans, right?
They never do that.
Certainly not. And so a ton of PhD laureates were there. Like, all these people were there. Nobel Prize winners were there. John Nash of A Beautiful Mind was a member of the Rand Corporation. And the closest thing to a reference in something is actually Dr. Strangelove himself. He is based on a famous member of the Rand Corporation who had said publicly, even if we were to get in a nuclear apocalypse scenario against Russia, we would survive as long as we had just bunkers underground that people could live in.
If you call that living.
And it was things like that that made people distrust the Rand Corporation, that they were just like, yeah, we thought of the apocalypse. Like, we've come up with those.
We've made it manageable.
So in the real world, I would think the Rand Corporation probably has come up with lots of ideas how to do stuff. How much the government executes it or not, that's another question. Probably more than you think, I would say. Mm. But yes, that is what the Rand Corporation is still in operation. I mean, there's actually, we are within miles of a Rand Corporation, one of their outlets there. They're based in Santa Monica. That's where their headquarters is. But they also have a San Francisco branch that we could visit right now and be shot on site.
Yeah, look forward to our upcoming interview on the Talking Simpsons Patreon.
But I like that Bart's going through all that conspiracy stuff. They have to put that to bed before Homer can try to be a better father, which Homer and Grandpa are basically divorced now. And first off, I just love the scene of Grandpa and Barney on the road. It's just, it's so funny that that's who he recruits. Another Dan Castellaneta voice character, too.
And just feast your ears on this tantalizing testimonial from my own flesh and blood, the son who puts the fun in Simpson and Son, my son, Barney!
I used to be a fat, disgusting slob.
That medicine seems to be giving your son a lot of gas. Yes.
I assure you, his belching is the result of an unrelated alcohol problem. It just ain't the same without Homer. He knew how to drive a car.
Yeah, so this is like the third time we've seen Barney as a bad stand-in for a celebrity or a needed person. So we had him standing in as Krusty, Bart, and now Homer.
He must work so cheap.
Yeah.
That he, and then, yeah, he was also, yeah, he
on
was
Bart
the
Chat.
Bart on Bart Chat.
I didn't do nothing.
He just has to be so cheap, and he had to play the governor instead of the town drunk. It's like, how does Barney get all these jobs?
Central
like,
casting works again.
I would hope he's at least working for free, but I do love the way Grandpa just throws off, like, unrelated alcohol problem. And so then we get to see, well, first off, when Homer, when he decides he's going to be a better parent, he ignores Maggie completely. I love that joke.
Yeah, you can barely see her behind his head.
Yes.
It's a nice reveal at the end of the scene.
I didn't get that in my first viewing. But then Homer is, his half-assed over-parenting is beautiful. I think I have gone through this with bouts of my father going like, no, I'm going to be a good parent. And he only has the stamina for like a week at best. And then afterwards, you just settle back into your old patterns of neglect.
Your very first bike.
Number one, I know how to ride a bike. Number two, I already own a bike. And number three, that is a girl's bike.
You're no girl. You're a boy. A good boy. You can be president. Scratch that. You will be president.
Dad!
I think Lisa needs another push on her new tire swing.
No, Dad. I want to get down. This tire is filthy and the steel belts are poking me.
No offense, Homer, but your half-assed underparenting was a lot more fun than your half-assed overparenting.
But I'm using my whole ass.
Lisa covered in grease being like torn apart by what were they?
Steel belts,
yeah.
Yeah, just like poking her. Like I have been in the tire swings that are really just an old tire, like, ugh, this looked fun. It's horrible. Like and that the idea that Homer, one, didn't even know Bart knew how to ride a bike and owned his own bike. It's that level of just checkoutedness of Bart's life that Homer doesn't even realize.
Yeah, didn't do any research.
Yes, and that then Lisa can at least recognize like this is half-assed overparenting and it's scary love.
Too much of your love can be scary. I like that quote a lot.
And they're just so used to him being raised by TV instead of Homer. They're just like, please, like I would be that way too. Like I know you maybe with both of my parents like. I'd rather watch TV. I kind of liked being not paid attention to a
Me
lot
too.
Of the time. I'd rather play video games. Like, this is outdoor and activity, mm-hmm. and it's no fun. Like, that Lisa and Bart just both accept, oh, yeah, he means drinking.
He's yeah, yeah.
Drink. Like, they know he means that. It's also
kind of deflates Lisa. Yes, I thought so.
Yes, I thought so too. They both know that. And it's rather distracting too that the backyard tree is blue in that shot.
It's weird.
It feels like an animation mistake that they just couldn't do it. Then meanwhile they go.
Tiny update. Mm-hmm. The hurricane knocked down my childhood tire swing.
Oh my
and I'll
goodness.
Never ever forgive the hurricane global warming and this administration for that.
It's finally gone too far.
It's gone.
It destroyed a 30-year-old tire swing.
It's kind of a pat ending, but I do like that they come back to the house where it's built, where all the problems started.
It's nice, like, storytelling symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though they don't notice two cars parked in the middle of nowhere.
Well, they're very drive. Stupid. He must have gotten a lift from Jasper or something.
Yes, or he just kept walking from the Barney thing to go back home.
I took a get around.
Here's where it all started to go wrong. How am I supposed to be a good dad when I never had one myself? Oh, Dad wasn't even around on Christmas morning when I actually got to meet Santa Claus. Some father. Wait a minute. Dad! Oh, this photo is a blessing. It eases my pain.
It's touching that Homer's positive memory burns down his house and destroys all of his past.
Yeah, meanwhile, Abe is throwing the tonic into the fire. The highly flammable tonic.
Yes. I love it. He's like, you've done all the damage you're going to do. And then it almost kills him. And though, actually, I can identify a bit with Homer's misremembering of meeting Santa Claus. Like, I've had that moment as a kid as a older person. I won't say adult, but I was just saying, like, yeah, and then there was a time Santa Claus dropped off all my presents while I was on vacation. Oh, wait a minute.
Everything you ever got for Christmas is the result of the parents you may or may not like, Henry.
Yeah. No, but it was just that realization, like, that you'd always assumed in your head it was Santa Claus until you just talked through it out loud. You're like, oh, wait, no, my parents did that. Or they made that happen. That's great.
They put me on the lap of a strange man in the mall.
Why would they do that? And though I also think Abe doing that one nice thing and pretending to be Santa Claus, maybe it shows that he did other nice things Homer doesn't remember, but I'd say overall Abe was a bad parent, just as Homer was a bad parent. They were both bad parents, or are bad parents. And though it is kind of a touching ending, I will say.
I like the ending.
Of parental, you know, reconnection.
I'm a screw-up. I burned down our house.
No, I'm a screw-up. I burned down our house.
You know what?
What?
We're both screw-ups.
It doesn't matter. What matters is you were right when you told me I never said anything nice about you.
No. Are you going to say something nice now?
Well, I hadn't thought that far ahead. Okay, here it goes. I'm not sorry I had you, son. I was always proud that you weren't a short man.
Dad.
What do you say we roll on the grass, son?
I'm with you, Dad.
Great ending. I like how all there's kind of like three stories going on in this episode, and they all get resolved in a satisfying way.
Yeah,
they're not just left lingering.
I mean, that ending, hearing it again there just really gets me of saying you've never said a nice thing, and then Homer just has to settle for like a terrible compliment. He's like, yeah, I'm so glad you weren't short.
Man.
And that's like, aw, Dad. Like, and
that's the best he can get.
And on the observations of classical hand-drawn animation, something the new show can't really do, the fire in this is so luminescent.
Yeah. I'm sure that's an actual light effect.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
It's really gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It is. Like, them being backlit by the fire in front of them, and it makes it even more powerful, the, you know, symbolic scene of them making up while their old house is destroyed.
Yeah, like all the old memories are being burned away, and hopefully they can start over on a new foot. They won't.
No,
they never will.
So that is the problem in general of taking this as reality, of like the realization that you and a parent that you don't like are both flawed can lead to a nice reconciliation. But central to that is forging a better relationship with that parent. And that is not what Homer and Abe do.
No.
Neither actually learn something from it. And Abe is senile enough that I get it, that why he wouldn't learn something. But Homer he doesn't learn something. He is a terrible parent onward from this episode. And I guess he just learned that, like, not to be as intense and not to try as hard because it scares the kids.
Yes. Passive parenting is the best, in my opinion.
Yeah. Just stand back. It's like, it's as Sun Tzu said, the best kind of king is one you don't even realize.
My dream parenting situation involves me meeting a 15-year-old who alleges to be my son. I really
Somebody
want that
did
to
all
happen.
The hard work.
Oh, yes.
Go back in time and sell that script to Paramount.
But starring me instead of Adam Chandler.
That reminded me of the Robin Williams Billy Crystal classic Father's Day.
I prefer My Giant. Much better movie. So yes, this has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. Thank you for listening, everybody. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts every Monday. And occasionally on Friday, we have episodes for you all about classic gaming. Just go to Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcast device. I think you'll like it. Everybody else, jump in.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter is where you'll find me. And that's where I tweet about new releases from the Patreon and other Talking Simpsons stuff. And obviously, if you are not a Patreon subscriber, you really should be, because you would have heard this episode a week early and without ads, as well as ton of other extras like Talking Critic exclusively on there, a ton of interviews, special videos like all three of us watching the original shorts that started The Simpsons, which have aged beautifully. They all look great. And so many more things.
I never say I'm Cantiste on Twitter, and as I just got an alert from Tank Rizzo, Am I the only person that likes to imagine Kirk Van Houten as the guy singing in Len, Steal My Sunshine? I was lying on the beach Sunday morning.
If we meet Hank Azaria, we have to get him to do that into a microphone.
Totally. It makes me laugh so much. And we do a bunch of other shows, lasertimepodcast.com. We just launched a brand new show in honor of October being the Halloweeniest month around. An Elm Street Nightmare with me and my buddy Lizzie Cuevas. We'll be breaking down every single Friday the 13th movie except the remake. Or maybe we'll do that. I'm not going to say. There might be other Patreon rewards for folks out there. But I should check that out every Tuesday before this show airs. Time Monday and Elm Street Nightmare Tuesday. This show Wednesday.
Fill all your time with that stuff, guys. And then 30-20-10 Thursday.
Yeah.
And then VGA Fridays.
Do on the weekend?
And patreon.com/lasertime. We have an exclusive show every Tuesday. I understand if you don't need this much of me in your life.
Oh, come on.
I know I don't.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with Fear of Flying. We'll see you then.
Infotainment.